Thank you very much. It's always very interesting for me to come, you know, a long way away from my hometown and to listen to some of our professionals, people that I know very well, but we have actually a fairly relaxed period of time to talk about our city. The first time I came to New York was in 1980 when I was a commodities trader. I worked for one of these big New York companies. So you kind of get a sense of my professional experience. But having been a politician, apart from things, I'm quite interested in people. And of course, if we don't have people, we don't have the environment in which we live. And having listened to the presentations from this afternoon, I think I'd like to try and shape my talk, and of course I've done the visuals already, but listening to the presentations, I'm enormously inspired. And I think, in a way, intuitively, we are all trying to say similar things, but from a different direction. If I can already summarize what I'm going to say and what I think I've heard from my colleagues is, first of all, we are talking about people and places. We're also talking about, in Hong Kong, a conflict between people and places. Because as you look at the pictures where we have people, and we're showing the kind of activities and the kind of places that we like, it seems to be very different from the big infrastructures, the buildings and so on that are being built today. And Peter Cookson-Smith just tried to tell us, how can we have change? How can we develop new areas? How can we redevelop old areas, but make the kind of places that is culturally sensitive, where people can have mixed uses, where, you know, we can see what people like to do. How do we do it? And obviously the conflict in Hong Kong today is we don't feel many of the developments, we don't feel we're getting it quite right. And I have to say, apart from myself, which Carol described as an activist, actually Nick Brooke and Peter are also activists. And we've kind of end up being lumped together because we are all trying to see from different perspectives how the people, the places, the cultural dimension of what we like to do can come together a little bit better. Now, the one word that we have heard it, but we haven't quite highlighted, it's of course the environmental dimension, the sustainable development dimension. And I don't mean this in terms of whether we are sustainable as a community. And I do mean our footprint, you know, our connection with nature. Let me just start with one thought and see if we can let that thought percolate, because I know I'm with a group of people who are architects, who are planners, who are built environment professionals. Can you imagine that perhaps in the next decade or two, that we're going to have building moratoriums imposed throughout the world because of climate change? Is this something that we can conceive? I tried this on a group of building professionals in Hong Kong. It was an international conference, so people were coming from different parts of the world. I thought nobody was going to say yes. I thought the professionals would say, this is the last thing that we want. But actually, they said, yes, we can conceive of this. And if we think that is a possibility, at least partial moratorium, then if we're thinking about placemaking, if we're thinking about retrofitting older buildings, where might we be going to? I don't know what the answer is. So let me just leave this thought hanging. What I'd like to do is to show you some pictures first of people and what we like to do. You've seen a little bit of it already with Peter's presentation. And then we'll be looking at some of the structures that you're more familiar with. Well, this is a good picture of Hong Kong people. Who are we? What do we like to do? What do we care about? And how does our city fit into who the people are? Well, young people like to go to these places. This is where we recreate, this is where we buy things, this is where we go to school, right? This is where We like to meet our friends. This is where we do our business. Throughout Hong Kong, you see many scenes of this sort, aggregations of people recreating. I tried to find a picture of ladies, because ladies and gentlemen like to do different things. But I couldn't find a good picture of what ladies like to do. This is a picture again. You know, why do we show these pictures? We show these pictures actually because lots of Hong Kong people walk along streets like this every day to, you know, to go shopping for things that we really need, you know, for food. Many of these streets are still there. And actually, the conflict in Hong Kong today is, how do we preserve the feel of these places? How do we preserve small places? How do we preserve these kinds of shops, you know, with small shopkeepers? Because we like it. And the conflict in Hong Kong today, with developers, with the Urban Renewal Authority, which is the public regeneration body, with the kind of policy that Nick Brook just told us about, how do we fit these things into a context where we can reproduce or where we can preserve this kind of cultural living that we love? The MTRC, what do we do in the MTRC? It's a time for contemplation. It's a time for reading. A lot of the times it's very crowded, but the MTRC in many ways give a crowded city a chance for us to have that little privacy to think about and to read our daily papers and, as I said, to contemplate. What do we do? I wouldn't say Hong Kong people are deeply religious in the Western sense, but clearly we are spiritual in our own way. Every January, many of the temples in Hong Kong are full of people going to commune with the spirit. So, you know, that part of Hong Kong life is alive and very well. This is something that I'm always very moved by. Every 4th of June, people gather, and we're talking about tens of thousands of people. They gather in a park in Hong Kong, and we commemorate what happened in 1989 at Tiananmen. And I show this not to make a political point, but just to say that when we talk about Hong Kong people, you know, all these pictures that you've seen of buildings and grand projects and so on, but when we ask, who are these people in Hong Kong? And you know, sometimes, even ourselves, people ask us, and we say, oh, well, what's Hong Kong about? You know, we say, well, we're very placid people, we're very non-political people, we're into making money. And I have to say to myself sometimes, but why do we do some of these other things? Is it true? Are we different from people elsewhere? No, I think we care about many, many things. And it's these moments that I think I see my society and I get a sense of, you know, we're like people everywhere else. We care about many things. And look at this picture. Every 1st of July now, since 2003, Hong Kong people go and do a big protest. In 2003, we had 500,000 people protesting a government piece of legislation that was about to be passed. And since then, you know, 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008, every year, the 1st of July, people come out in smaller crowds. Last year, I think maybe we had 20 or 30,000 people. You know, nothing to sneeze at. If you had 20 or 30,000 people out in the street protesting something, no, that's not small. So all I'm trying to say again here is Hong Kong people are quite engaged. They're quite engaged with government policy. This particular march, every 1st of July, it's sort of become a democracy march. But the democracy march is, I think, about many other things that government are deciding. And one of the things that comes through now in public discourse, it's about urban planning and urban design. Okay, now we come to the buildings, but don't forget about the people that you've just met. Okay, now, of course, you know, the kind of environment we live in, you know, juxtaposition, the new and the old, this new building that is there, this is a commercial building, of course, and around it you can see residential buildings. So, you know, this tightness of where we live and where we work, it's often the same space. You've seen this. We talked about the number of families that live in publicly built housing. That's housing built by the government. Approximately 50% of the population live in some kind of building that the government has put up. Now, I think you saw this building already. And the complaint today is not just that these buildings are perhaps very uniform, but also because they're now very broad. You know, what we used to have is we used to have a few buildings that are very tall. But what we have now are buildings that are uniform and extremely broad. The people in Hong Kong are now complaining that this is like a wall. And when you put this wall in certain places, including at the harborfront, it's got an aesthetic problem. And now we also know from modeling that it's creating blockages of airflow, which exacerbates our air pollution problem. Okay, these are some of the new towns. And you can see, in a way, what we mean by a kind of wall effect, right? The wall effect is these buildings often look exactly the same because it's the same development. And the width of these blocks are getting wider and wider. Now, I want to show you this is to say, these are buildings that we no longer live with. Indeed, these are the buildings that we got rid of. It's kind of hard to conceive that in New York, if you had a building like this, a residential home, that you'd get rid of it. But this is my mother's family home that my family got rid of. And you know, today, we take out these pictures and we look at them, and I must say, people of my generation start asking our uncles, why did you get rid of this? Now, if I did my homework correctly for this, I would show you what is there now. In some ways, every time I show this picture and show the next one, which I'm not going to show you, is people say, oh, you know, this is in Hong Kong, people say, oh. Because, of course, it's five tower blocks, which the uncle who inherited this house sold. You know, so this is the house, just for record, this is the house where they filmed Love is a Many Splendor Thing. Okay, now, there are some places that we shouldn't live in, but we do in Hong Kong. You see this is a container terminal, and you see at the back how many people live in apartment blocks. Now, I work in the environmental area. I'm very concerned about air pollution, and actually marine pollution is one of the most toxic pollution because, of course, in large ships, they are allowed to burn very toxic fuel. The fuel is very toxic. It's a very thick, kind of gooey bunker fuel. And we now know in Hong Kong from government studies that there are signatures of this marine fuel in many pockets of dense residential area. So this means it's not good for people's health. Now, but it's not so easy to change this. So the reason I'm just showing this is to show that we now know there's a problem, huge impact on public health, but how do we change this quickly? So again, I'm not going to answer this question, but just to say these are some of the practical day-to-day problems that we're going to have to deal with in the next decade. This is my favorite picture. This was actually a picture shown on a website of an engineering company. And actually, they were trying to show what a great bridge this is. Right, so this was a picture in celebration of the engineering might of what we do. This is a bridge, a new bridge that was being built. Now, if we go back here, oops, sorry. If we go back and look at the arrow, you know, and look at that the low block, the one that is closest to the terminal. And you look at this, these are the same guys on the right-hand side. That's not exactly low-income housing in Hong Kong. That's middle-income housing. But as I said, this is the kind of scene that people don't often look at. I don't think I need to really say anymore. Again, imagine that for us. How do we transform? I mean, what can we do? What can we do to improve this for the people? Okay, now these are the nice pictures that you can download, lots of them. These are the pictures we like to show. Now, I want to say that this is a kind of nice evening because we're able to take a clear picture. Now, this is on a bad day. So one of the problems that we do have in Hong Kong is pretty bad air quality, which is why I'm going back to the issue of when we're thinking about buildings that we put up, areas that we plan. Now that we have the knowledge, the modeling techniques, you know, I mean, now that we know so much more, how do we think about also planning and transforming our cities as we go forward, thinking about public health, environmental health, low carbon, nature, and all of these things? And as the two previous speakers reminded us, Hong Kong is one of those places where we are, in fact, very close to nature, very close to mountains and seasides and so on. We ourselves in Hong Kong now are saying, if those are our assets, how do we clean them up? How do we keep them clean? And of course, I think Peter also showed a very helpful picture of Hong Kong's in relations to southern China, something called the Po River Delta. The Po River Delta, on the other side of the border on mainland China, just in case you don't know, this is the manufacturing hub of China. It is not often known that this area that is the same size approximately as the Bay Area in California, this was the first and still the thumping heart of export manufacturing. So if you can imagine New York being right next to, you can almost walk there, you know, right next to a manufacturing giant. And obviously the cleanup that must come in the next decade or two so that we don't get this kind of situation. Well, the bright lights. I know this is going to go. Right? As we think about climate change, energy efficiency, this sort of thing is going to go. But what will replace it? You know, in the world where we're talking about energy efficiency, are we going to take it all from sunlight and blast it out at night? Or are we going to have a our children, are they going to have a different way of looking at cosmetics for building? Because, you know, doing this at night, this is cosmetics. This is not what we really need. Okay, we talked about harbor reclamation. This is the last piece of reclamation in the Central Harbor. We have eaten into the harbor because we needed convenient land that is easy to build. When I was in public office, in a way, a movement came about to really say, let's stop reclaiming the Central Harbor. Because if we did anymore, we'll have no harbor left. So I think Hong Kong people agreed with that. They joined in that campaign, which is why this is the last piece of harbor reclamation. So if you see this as part of the story of that conflict between how we develop, the old way has to stop. We're now struggling through the last piece of reclamation. Perhaps Mrs. Lam tonight, when she comes, she's going to talk about some of these conflicts from a government perspective. I do have one more thing to show you, which is from another perspective. Right? And now, this is the government's vision. Also, Peter, myself, and Nick, we've all been talking about how can we redesign, deconstruct, and reconstruct the government's plan to produce something that we all talked about. You know, smaller scale, cut them up, bring people closer to the water. You know, in the government's design, of course, you see a lot of green, but it doesn't really tell you the layer, you know, that last picture that Peter showed, you know, the multi-layers of activities that are going to be there. I show this only to say that this last piece of reclamation, the fight is over what you put on top. And when we're thinking about what we put on top, the kind of questions that we're saying to ourselves is, in 100 years, well, maybe we don't have 100 years if we have climate change, right? 50 years, this will be covered with water. But assuming we have 100 years, When people look back, are they going to say, gee, you know, those guys in Hong Kong, they had some good ideas. Now, this is a nice waterfront. And when we ask that of ourselves in Hong Kong, this conversation we have with our government officials, is this what you're planning? Are we going to be proud of it in the decades to come? Very hard for government to answer this question. Hand on heart, oh, it's going to be brilliant. Right? So all I'm trying to say is, this is the conflict. These conversations that we're having, it's bringing people together, it's bringing exciting debate and discussion, but politically, of course, it is a conflict. Well, if we go look at this, right, if we deconstruct what's going to be there, huge highways. These kinds of things, right, where you can see people can't walk across there. The reason we can't have at-grade walking is because we've had to put everybody on walkways, because the priority in government planning is to give way to cars. So you can imagine, in this kind of environment, it really doesn't help your air quality, your noise level, your visual impact, and so on. Now, what happens then in Hong Kong is you give priority to the roads, to cars, you're giving them the nice places, harbourfront places, this is what we have, and then when people say we need some greenery, they put it in places where you can't get to. So this is, again, part of the conflict that we have. We're trying to struggle through in Hong Kong and say, as we try to redesign the harbourfront, what do we do with the infrastructure that is there? Can we conceive of a time when we're going to take these things down? What options do we have to put it under the water in some places? I'm not necessarily saying here, but you know, the idea of reconstructing the city, of reconnecting the people to the harbourfront, of creating the kind of space that Peter showed us, the kind of places that Hong Kong people like, how do we do that? Now, some people see this as a cost, to say, gosh, to do that's going to cost us a lot of money. Some of us see this as development. This is great. Lots of jobs. For the better. Right. So again, as I said, this is the dialogue that we need to have in Hong Kong. This is a picture. You saw, you know, these buildings coming up in Kowloon. Now, this picture is, in fact, quite out of date, but it's one that I still show in Hong Kong to say that, well, that the top picture is what Kowloon was like. And here, what you don't see so well are the mountains at the back. Because, of course, Kowloon means nine dragons, and the nine dragons are the nine hills at the back. And what used to happen if we were standing on Hong Kong Island looking at Kowloon is you see fairly low-rise buildings, because we used to have our airport there. Can't put high-rises there, but now that the airport has moved, this is what we're going to have. So there's some argument about height restrictions. Now, architects don't like height restrictions. But as a community, that when we're thinking of how we want the central harbor, you know, the identity, the key identity of Hong Kong to look like, this is, of course, the kind of discussion we need to have. But we won't have a chance to have that discussion because these buildings are all coming. Some of them are there already. So again, I'm telling this just to show that the time space sometimes that a community has to have this discussion, to design and to go forward, sometimes they are lost. And I'm sure you understand that too in New York. In the future, if we were to pull back, so to speak, since buildings are 30 to 40 years old in Hong Kong, in 30 years' time, what might we want there? I don't know what the answer is. I won't be here. But the community is going to continue, and they're going to have to continue talking about what they want. These pictures are usually also of urban poverty, but I won't go into that. And my last slide is just to share with you some of the major issues in Hong Kong. Shaping of the city, we talked about that. Widening of the income gap. Some of it might have to do with our land policy. Public health, air pollution, water pollution, noise, waste, food safety, infectious diseases. We're talking about public action, what the policies need to be to get it right, versus individual prevention. There are some things that we can do as individuals, but we are going to need policies, forward-looking policies that take us into the future. As Hong Kong people become more energized and more keen on politics, public affairs, public dialogue, these issues are going to come to the fore. Climate change, I talked about that already, say no more. Governments and democracy. How will those decisions be made in a time when the public wants much more participation? Thank you.